Okay. Let's see.
I don't know.
Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak, when he started to teach Megillas Esther, he began with a pasuk in Mishlei. Birvos tzadikim yismach ha'am. When tzadikim arise, everyone's happy. Uver michshol rishayim. When rishayim rule and take control, so yeh'nacham, everyone's sad. So when he quoted this pasuk, what do you want to convey? When the tzaddikim rise, everyone's happy. When the rishayim rise to power, everyone's sad. So the Medrash amplifies. Not sure whether it's a Medrash or whether it's a Yitzchak's point. And he contrasts when various kings in Tanakh who cause general welfare take control. The Torah refers to them, Tanakh refers to them, Vehamelech, Vehamelech Shlomo, Vehamelech David, Vehamelech Koresh. When kings who cause general suffering and tyranny and hardship, when they arise to power, then instead of writing Vehamelech, Tanakh writes Vayehi b'melech, Vayehi b'melech Achashverosh, Achashverosh, Vayehi b'melech Achav, Vayehi b'melech. So melachim that cause general welfare, Vehamelech. Melachim that cause general suffering and hardship, Vayehi, because it's like Vay, it's the sound of Vayehi b'shalach parasam. It sounds like it's sad and suffering and moaning. What was Rabbi Yitzchak trying to convey? That Achashverosh causes general suffering? What does it have to do with the Megillah? Megillah is us and Haman and Achashverosh somewhere looking in the background. If you look carefully at the Megillah, there's a second story happening. The first story is Haman, Hashmelar, Belabis, Kol Yehudim, Kindlesing Achashverosh, Lechinosis, Kol Yehudim. But there's a general story taking place. And that general story is that wicked people, when they rise to power, they cause social and moral malaise and suffering for the entire kingdom of Persia. And when Esther and Mordechai rise to power, Perek Zayin Ches, all of a sudden things change. What are you saying? Well, I don't really have time to discuss this, maybe at a longer share. If you look at the Megillas Esther, there are 10 parties. 10 parties that brace. That's like one of the themes, or the back themes, called a literary trope, that holds the Sefer together. And 5 parties happen before the recovery, before the turnaround, and 5 parties happen after the turnaround. And if you look at all the parties before the turnaround, it's, excuse me for saying it, it's orgiastic, it's debauched, it's degenerate. 180 days of people filling themselves with food, vomiting it up. It's like a Roman orgy. It's lying there on couches of alabaster in open view, b'chasar ginas b'san ha-melech, the people can look at them, they walk at them. It's no purpose, it's endless. Whereas the later parties are Meshulach Manav, Matanas Levionim, there's a purpose, Esther to try to save Am Yisrael. So there's a contrast in the parties. So in the beginning of the Megillah, where Haman is rising to power, it's not just the Jewish people that are suffering, but there's a moral degeneracy in Shushan. Chazal say, why was Achashverosh called Achashverosh? Shakol Nasin Russian Biyama. Because basically, who do you think supported, who do you think footed the bill for this 180-day party in Shushan? All the poor peasants throughout the kingdom were being taxed through the nose in order that the people in Shushan could drink and eat and have a wild debauched party. So there's immoral balance. There's a lack of moral equilibrium in this 127 regional empire. And then all of a sudden, what happens when Esther is appointed in Perek Gimel? V'hanacha l'medina sosya. So all of a sudden, Achashverosh says, you know, don't pay that much money. I understand. So there's a backstory to the main story. The main story of Megillas Esther is L'hashmed l'arug 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 saved us and its historical connotations. The backstory is that B'ravos tzadikim yismach am, this is the pasuk Rabbi Yitzchak quoted, that when Achashverosh is being led by Haman, there's taxation, heavy taxation, there's moral debauchery, moral degeneration. And when Esther and Mordechai arrive in the scene, all of a sudden, Banach Medina says, less partying, private parties, so there's a shift in morality. So there are two stories happening in Megillas Esther. One is a specific story for Am Yisrael, one is a broader story. And Yitzchak was trying to put his finger on that broader story. Okay, when Reb Brechia began to teach Megillas Esther, he began with a pasuk in Yeshaya. What's the pasuk in Yeshaya? Mi pa'al vi'asa. Who created everything? Korei ha'daros mirosh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls each generation from the get-go. What was Reb Brechia's drasha? Mitchilas b'riyaso shel adam, hiskin HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'kol echad v'yachad masher roilad. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the beginning of creation, knew that certain elements would emerge into the human culture, into the human consciousness, at certain points in history. At this point in history, this element should emerge. At this point in history, this element should emerge. And he assigned each element to a particular period and to a particular person who would draw that element. So Adam is Rosh Leitzur, creation. Cain and Hevel, murder arrived, the Medrash says. Noach was the first person who was saved as opposed to a worldwide deluge. Avram was the first time Mila was introduced. Yitzchak was the first time Mesiras Nefesh HaKadosh Hashem was introduced. So it's not as if everything happened in the beginning of dawn of time. Hashem scheduled it and gradually introduced different elements into history. What was introduced into history in Megillas Esther? So the Medrash says, Achashverosh Rosh Lakmochrim, the Haman Rosh Lakonim. Achashverosh was the first seller, and Haman was the first buyer. No one bought and sold before Achashverosh and Haman. What's the purpose of this Medrash? Well, it's actually obviously referring to the 10,000 shkalim that Haman offered Achashverosh for the genocide. But what is happening here? So what you're seeing are two things. First of all, this is the first time in history that humanity accumulated huge, massive wealth. Until this point, people lived in tribes. People lived scattered. How much can you really make in a tribe? You live with your cattle. People have wealth, but what you're seeing here is an accumulation of wealth. It starts with Mitzrayim that accumulated a lot of wealth in Brachus. A lot of their wealth was transferred to the Jewish people, Berchus Gadol. That's why they took a lot of the gold and clothing afterwards. Am Yisrael moves into Eretz Yisrael to build the Beis HaMikdash. It takes a couple hundred years, but they build the Beis HaMikdash, and Hashem wants the Beis HaMikdash to be an international project. That's why it's contributed to by not just Paro's wealth, but by Hiram. And then Nebuchadnezzar invades Eretz Yisrael and takes a lot of the wealth up north to modern-day Lebanon. And then Nebuchadnezzar takes over from Ashur and finishes the job and takes all the wealth of the Beis HaMikdash. And now, who succeeds Nebuchadnezzar in Babel? Paras and Mada. So you've got multi-generational wealth accumulating in Shushan. And that's why the party is so important, because it displays all this wealth. Now the question is, how do people use their wealth? And what do people respond when they reach wealth? That's part of the challenge we have in our generation, is the Jewish community is wealthier than it's been probably in 800 years. You'd have to go back to the Spanish era, the golden era of Spanish Jewry, pre-1400, because already in 1400, a lot of their wealth had been depleted by a lot of pogroms and a lot of suffering. You have to go back to 1200, 1300 to find it. We don't have a tradition of how to be wealthy. A lot of people don't know how to use their money, how to build a home, how many cars to have, how to be tzniastik when you have money. So there's an accumulation of wealth. What you also have is you have a culture in which wealth is idolized. Why? Because it's multicultural. It's a lot of what we're going through today. Multiculturalism says there is no one controlling ethnic, racial, religious identity. Those things are out the window. It's like a carnival of different ideas. And you're seeing that carnival of different ideas in this party. Everyone has their will. Someone wants to drink this type of wine. Chazal says someone drink that type of wine. There was no controlling feature in Shushan. This is the way we drink. In Shushan, this is who we worship. In Shushan, it's all just a free-for-all. So when there's no value, like we're all Christians, we're all Muslims, we're all Hindus, we come to the following, we're all Scottish, when you create Netherlands and everyone just projects their own identity, and there's no controlling identity, there is only one common unifying element. What's that common unifying element? Money. Because green is the universal color, not in those days, but in our days. Green is the universal color. So all of a sudden, you're seeing these two phenomena colliding. On the one hand, there's massive wealth. On the other hand, there are no other religious, racial, ethnic, even gender elements. How do we define ourselves? And so everything in Shushan is driven by money and wealth, even genocide. If you want to kill a people, if you can afford it, it's yours. And that's the tragedy of what's happening in Shushan. At a certain point, money starts to become such a controlling feature that all other values, including human life, are out the window. You don't get the sense that Achashverosh hates the Jewish people. You get the sense that he needs a lot of money for the next party. So who's going to foot the bill for the next party? Haman's 10,000 shekel. And does Achashverosh care if millions of people will die? Not at all, because money has become the controlling feature. So Achashverosh is Rosh Lamochrim, and Haman is Rosh Lakonim. It's not that no one bought and sold before. It was this moment in history of wealth, multiculturalism, and the dollar, in this case the shekel, was able to create the genocidal wave. Okay, so it's interesting to hear Chazal trying to take us behind the scenes in Megillas Esther and tell us some of the stories that aren't immediately obvious to us on the front lines. Okay?